I want to bring in our guest for the first part of the show, Hall of Fame basketball coach in the state of Minnesota. He's the head coach of the Minneapolis North Polar Bears, and I love that school because that's my old high school, North High. But before we introduce Coach Larry McKenzie, I want to play this little introduction I have of him.
But I think we have to define what is that championship. And so as I talk about building a championship program, one of the things that I like to do, so first of all, is to say for me, I tell everybody, I coach, my game plan is Genesis to Revelation is what I use. And so the one thing that I always say to coaches, and it's too bad that there's not a lot of more young coaches that are here, I think the first thing that we have to do is ask ourselves the question of the why. Why are we doing this? And all too often, the thing that I've learned over the last few years is that ultimately, yes, all of us want to be on the big stage. We want the banners. We want the rings. But the question really becomes, why are we doing this? And I think sometime in this profession that we really don't understand the assignment. I think we don't understand the assignment. And so one of the things for me is to really, that I focus on, is the assignment. Proverbs says that that our responsibility is to raise a child in a manner so that when they get old, they will never forget. So our responsibility, you know, I always say we are partners. And those young men that come to us as 14, they're our clay. And our first and greatest responsibility is to mold them in a manner of not being champions on the hardwood. But one of the things, as I talk about being a champion and building a championship program, to me it's like building a house. It's like building a house. And so what becomes the foundation of your program? And Vince Lombardi say winning is a habit. It's not a sometime thing, it's an all-the-time thing. So how do we always win becomes the question. For me, the vision, the mission is this. And this is what I say is the foundation of my program, is to use basketball as a tool to empower young men to be champions on the court, in the classroom, in their families, and in the community.
Coach McKenzie. Coach Larry McKenzie, man, I wanted to play I wanted to play that clip, Coach, before I introduced you to our audience around the country tonight, because I really think that you're not only one of the best basketball coaches in the country, period, you're also setting a sterling example for being what a coach should be, and I think a leader of young men on the high school and college level. And something you said in that really caught me. You think some of your peers are not getting the assignment. Can you speak to what you think the role of a coach is supposed to be?
Well, I mean, I think I speak to it in that. I mean, and you went back to archives. I think that was a coaching clinic maybe 5 years ago. That I spoke at, where you found that talk from, but so what happens is this: I see a lot of guys. Everybody says, you know, I want to be a coach. I want to be a coach, and I listen to young guys talk about. I mean, they're coaching at the park board. They're coaching middle school, and they talk about they've won 100 games. You know, or they've got this many championships, and I'm like, man, you've got it all wrong. You know what I'm saying? I mean, at that age or what, it's not really about how many games. And so a lot of guys get into it for, you know, to build a resume, to do certain things. And the kids are the lowest priority of what they do. And as I said, you know, I just think it's a blessing from the man above to be tapped on the shoulder, to be able to have the responsibility to mold young men. And I have to say, for me, in particular, young black men that look like me. And so I always say I get them at 14, as a 14-year-old boy, that you leave me as an 18-year-old young man. and I am the potter, and they are the clay. And I mean, that's what it's really all about, you know. And I think when you look at, when you dig down deep, and people really research, I mean, the Dean Smith and all of the great ones, it's not about the John Woods, and it really doesn't come down. It's not about X's and O's. It's not about executing, you know, certain plays. It's really about developing them, you know, not for a couple games, but for life. Because I was telling my kids today, I wish you would have been at practice. You know, even if you're lucky, if you're in that 1%, if you're in that 1% and lucky enough someplace in life that somebody writes you a check to play the game, it'll probably last on an average 3.5 to 4 years. Now, we see a lot of these guys, the LeBron James, the Kobe Bryant, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, some of these guys that get 15, get 18, get 20 years. But that's very, very rare. And all too often, I mean, that's what, you know, when you look at the media and all that stuff, we focus on, they focus on, like, even that. I mean, you know, guys, you see Stephon Curry, you see KD. You know, when they get that 51 points, nobody talks about the shots that they put up to get to that level, the nights that they spend in the gym, the time that they spent away from their family. I mean, I tell people, everybody loves to shine, but nobody loves to grind. And that's what it takes. And that's what our responsibility is as coaches, you know, is to put the best product out there. And if that's not about how many games you win. That's about just giving, putting these guys on the right path. So, long answer.
No, that's a great answer, Coach McKenzie, because you know, we've had you on the show before. Just people are still tuning in. We're talking with Coach Larry McKenzie, the head basketball coach at North High School in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the North High Polar Bears. Coach McKenzie is a six-time state champion. But, Coach, I think you're probably prouder of the things you've done with your young man and helping to revitalize North High as much as all those championships.
Oh, I mean, when I get an opportunity, I tell people, I mean, that's what I'm most proud of. In 19 years as a high school basketball coach, to be able to stand in front of everybody, and it's documented, 100% graduation, inner-city kids, 5, 6 National Honor Society students, 100% graduation on time, 100% has gone to either a 2-year or 4-year school. That to me is my greatest stat. That's my greatest stat, you know. And I mean, when I get the invitation, you know, to graduation, and those kids are walking across stage, or they impacting other kids' life, I mean, that is the payback. That's what I'm most proud of.
Absolutely.
All right. All right. And so, Ricky, in the introduction, you forgot to mention Extraordinary Noop also.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Former Providence pole mark. Yeah, six years.
There you go. Coach, what about the what gave you the greater satisfaction to be watching TV at home and seeing one of your players playing at one of the D1 schools on TV and doing well, or maybe a player 8 years later with a family coming back to see you with a son and tell him how proud or how much this coach made me a man?
I mean, I think that's the greatest. You know what? And we've talked about this before. Father's Day for me, you know, everybody talk about Christmas and that. Father's Day for me is the best day in America. For my life, okay. On Father's Day, I would tell you right now I probably average about 300 calls from former players and young men that I've coached and I've mentored. You know, just calling Happy Father's Day and thanking me for the difference that I've made in their lives. I mean, there is no greater day, no greater blessing than that right there. And so when a young man, you know, that I coached 8 years ago, 10 years ago, comes to a game with his son, I want to introduce you to my coach, and this is the person that made me a man. I mean, you know, for many of my guys, I mean, I am their father. I have been their father,
right.
You know.
Wow.
And so, I mean, for them to bring their son and have that kind of exchange with me. I mean, man, that's, you know, I mean, that's better than putting on any ring.
That is so
definitely
awesome.
Hear you on that. Yep.
Did you have something else, Mike?
No, I want to get that one out there because I just know, you know, just the gratification of having somebody come back years later and say how much you touched their lives. Because I have that from teaching and from when I was coaching too. You know, I had, especially, you know, when I showed these guys how to hurdle the right way, and they were like, you know, I didn't like hurdles at first, but you made me enjoy it, and then I went on and did pretty well with it afterwards. So,
yeah, you know, and brothers, I mean, here's the other thing I tell. So, you know, every year I've been doing this for the last 20 years. I mean, for the work that I do, I ask the kids all the time. Everybody in here, if your parents have a college fund, raise your hand. 99% of my kids never put their hands up. And so to see those kids graduate, go to college, take advantage of this game, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
and do those kind
mm-hmm.
of things, I mean, that's rewarding. That's I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yep.
And Larry, I definitely want to get into some basketball concepts for you here on the AfricanAthlete.com. But I think it's important to talk about, you know, what you're really about, and that's building young men, and more in particularly building young black men. And you just look at, you know, some of the bad decisions we make sometimes. And a kid like Kareem Hunt, the football star for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, Larry, you look at that one moment. May have cost him a generation of
yes,
money.
Yes, it has.
It's stuff like that. Yeah. Are lessons like that things you relate to your kids on the consequences of decisions that we make, especially as young black men, like I know so many of your kids are?
So we do that on a daily basis, and we're actually we're in a collaboration with the city of Minneapolis. And we're actually every Thursday, our kids is getting working with the city on it's called Man Up. It's a curriculum that speaks to domestic violence. And one of the things, you know, we had a situation. It's been 2 years ago now. Some kids I know very well playing for the University of Minnesota, faces blasted all over the TV. You know what I'm saying, looking like criminals, I mean, and that kind of stuff because, you know, kids went to a party. And so one of the things that we've been really trying to focus on the last 2 years is make sure that our kids have that information before they step on a college campus, you know, so that they – and I tell my kids all the time, now, once I give you the information, you don't have to take a chance. You can make a choice. And so, so right now, every Thursday – we're doing a class around domestic violence, how to talk to women, how to treat women, no means no, all of that kind of stuff. And I'm going to say this. I mean, I've had the discussion with my players and my wife about that young man. Somewhere along the line, a coach, a teacher in his family, because that was learned behavior. That was learned behavior. And one of the things we, again, you know, that we do, a lot of these guys, I mean, especially when you're as talented as that young man is, he's probably some way been given a pass, and now it's caught up with him.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that was the first time. I think it's the first time that he got caught.
And now he's paying a heavy price.
No question about it. Like you say, it's going to cost them a generation. I mean, and again, if he has not seen what they did to our frat brother Colin Kaepernick, he may never get an opportunity to run the ball again.
Right. And you think about the hypocrisy that we see today, and this is something we were going to get into later. We'll get into it with you right now, Coach. You look at what's happening in Washington with you know, unfortunate injuries to Alex Smith and to Colt McCoy. You got options right. to bring in a guy that can help your team. You choose Mark Sanchez. There's not a NFL scout in the country to tell you Mark Sanchez is a better quarterback.
Better quarterback. Yeah. I mean, it's no question. But we also already know what that's about too, right? So there's been numerous opportunities. I mean, of quarterbacks that have gone down. You know, the decision that Arizona made. You know, I mean, to go with a young guy, but you can't tell me having a guy like Colin Kaepernick, especially in the NFL today. I mean, the most valuable thing that you have, right? Ask Baltimore, the most valuable, or New Orleans, the most valuable thing you have is that veteran quarterback on the bench,
absolutely.
Ready to play.
But guys, here's the thing that kills me with Washington. Okay, then they go out and sign a guy who has arrested for domestic abuse, has a history
yep.
of running afoul of the rules and sometimes the rules of law. So you're telling us that it's okay to bring in a guy with those kind of issues, but a man who stands for justice and equality, you don't want him to be a part of your organization. I mean, but that's where we are. And Larry, as a coach, I mean, and a father figure to some of these kids, I'm sure you have to explain some of these things. You have to explain the police violence. You guys had the tragedy there a few years ago with Philando Castile.
Philando yep. Castile, yeah, yeah. We had one two blocks away from the school with a young man by the name of Jamar Clark. I mean, it actually happened the Saturday before we started our practice of November 2015. I mean, you know, African American male shot, killed, no weapon. And no charges. Those are all conversations that, you know, so when you listen, you know, to the audio tape that you shared with the audience before, I mean, those are all things that I'm talking about that we have to. And as coaches, we have a responsibility. You know what I'm saying? It's not about just for me to not come in and talk about out-of-bound plays. When those things happen, that's real. And son, it will impact you. You know, it will impact you somewhere down the line. And so you got to be careful. It could have been any one of us.
Right.
Right.
And that's why, and Mike, I'm going to get you. I just want to get this comment in. And that's why before we can even get, Coach, before you can even get to the X's and O's of the game of basketball, you got to make sure your kids are getting home safely, are getting to school safely, are not having issues along the way, not having issues within their house, just to get to practice so they can
absolutely.
Work on the out-of-bounds play.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it.
So, Coach, digressing away from that, how do you explain to your players when you get superstars like Kevin Durant and then Draymond having their incident on the team, and then, you know, that not kind of filtering down to your high school age guys? So how do you explain that scenario?
Well, I mean, you know, guys are gonna disagree. I just think one of the challenges that you know, I mean, all of us have been athletes, right? So track, basketball, golf, whatever. You have disagreements with your coach. You had disagreements
right.
with your teammate. You know, but until recently, it wasn't all on video. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't all on audio. I mean, before people say what happened in Vegas stayed in Vegas, it was what happened in the locker room stayed in the locker room. You know,
right.
I mean, that incident, the blow-up happened on the court. But I think, you know, to be honest with you, that ain't a bad thing if those – unfortunately, the media played it a certain way. But if that's
right. –
sometimes those things bring teams closer together.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, I tell my guy, I mean, sometimes it's good to have a little scuffle, you know, in the locker room.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. But I think it was overblown in terms of those guys. I mean, you know, and to me, it depends on how you look. Because, you know, sometimes people will really say that that's leadership. you know, challenging your teammate.
Right.
You know, so it's a matter of perspective, right? I mean, accountability. I mean, KD is saying, hey, I was open. You got a better shot. I mean, you know what I'm saying? This ain't about you. This is about us. Now, he didn't say it in that manner, but for all practical purposes, I mean, that's what was the intent of it, right? I mean, this is about the team. That was a selfish move.
Right.
Hey, you know, speaking of,
and that's part of holding your teammates accountable.
And
I think, you know, with his contract coming up, and, you know, I mean, I just think it was taken out of context and, you know, became news that wasn't news.
And so much of that happens now, guys, with social media. You have all these media platforms where you know, something happens, and it's flashing across the world in an instant. You know, back in the day, we had to go back, write our story, and then wait till the paper come out the next day, man. But it's instant now. So
I mean, right, which
you know,
makes y'all job, I mean, you know, and then that's the thing about it, right? So you daily calling all of your contacts because you don't want somebody to scoop you, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you're checking their Twitter, you checking Facebook, Instagram, all of, you didn't have to do that back in the day. You know what I'm saying?
Man.
But now you wanna be y'all in the business, you know, you wanna be the first one to get it. As soon as you can,
absolutely.
Get it out there. And even now, you know, some of these guys, I mean, just because they don't have a whole lot of integrity, they don't even do their due diligence. You know what I'm saying? The fact
exactly.
check, nothing. They just take something and run
right.
with it.
Right. Well, I think now we're in an age where a lot of guys in the media want to be part of the story instead of being storytellers and reporting of the story. So I think that goes in the play there. But let me get everybody caught up. You're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton, columnists for theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com. And please make sure you go to theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com and subscribe to our daily postings that pop up right in your email every day. And, Coach, one thing I wanted to Mike mentioned the Warriors, and I got a chance to see Steph Curry play here in Detroit the other night. And, you know, Coach, he takes some bad shots, man. And I just wonder, I mean, he's a pro. Mike, he took one at the hash with a guy in his face. I mean, he made it, right?
Yeah.
But that's a bad shot, Coach McKenzie. And I'm wondering, or maybe you guys might disagree. It went in, so I guess it wasn't that bad a shot. But what do you think his impact on the game of basketball has been over the last few years, Coach McKenzie?
So, I mean, he's a prolific scorer and a great shooter. And, you know, I was talking to my kids tonight. I mean, it's changed the game because everybody wants to be Steph Curry. You know, everybody wants to, and every coach right now wants to emulate the Golden State Warriors. So they want to have five guys spread out the floor that can shoot threes and knock down threes, and whoever makes the most shots at the end of the night, which Detroit did the other night when he on his comeback. But here's the thing that I tell my kids. First of all, I tell my kids don't watch Steph Curry because he will cause you not to play. Because
exactly.
if you take those shots that he take, you're gonna be sitting on the bench with me. So, but the other side of it is again what I said earlier. Think about his. So Steph Curry's father was Dale Curry, who was one of in his time. Was one of the purest and best shooters in the NBA. This kid has been shooting since he's been big enough to hold a ball. And probably, I would say, the Steph Currys, the Klay Thompsons, those guys have taken more practice shots in their life than most of the – probably twice as many shots as the guys in the NBA. Because those guys been kids. They've been at shoot-arounds. Since they're 2 or 3 years old. So those are bad shots, but he practiced those shots.
Yeah.
I mean, Brother Hampton, Ricky, you like some of the shots that Tiger Woods make, right?
Right.
The average golfer can't go out there and hit some of those shots Tiger make.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, and you marvel at, you know, how, I mean, some of the shots that he make, but he practiced those shots. But what we don't see is that. So you get the guy, you know, with the 25 handicap, go out there and think he's going to be Tiger Woods. That don't work.
You know, hey,
that's true.
You know, you guys talking to the defending champion of the pharmacy, Hills, Michigan's senior league, and I got there by working on my game every day. Even right now.
Okay, right.
I cut every day. Because I know that's what it's going to take.
I'm going to have to come out there in the spring and get some lessons because I'm the guy with the 25 handicap.
you listen to the African-American Athlete.com radio show with our host, Coach, with our guest, Coach Larry McKenzie, the coach of the North High Polar Bear.
Hey, Ricky, you got pretty low there, brother.
Of the level, you know, and that's one of the things, Coach McKenzie. You know, you hear people talk about coaching. Well, he's only coaching. I've heard it all my life about the HBCUs. People talking about, well, Eddie Robinson was coaching at Grambling. John Merritt was coaching at Tennessee State. A coach, I don't care what level, you have to prepare your team to play.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
And make the adjustments along the way. You're either good at that. Or you're not good at that. You're either prolific at that or you're not prolific at that.
Yeah, the game don't change. I mean, right. And that's the thing about it. I mean, you're right. You hear people say that it doesn't matter what level that you're at. I mean, right, like you say, in the end, the end goal is the same, right? You got to win games. You got to win games. And as you just said, you're either good at that or you not. And I tell people, I got friends that been doing this for 20 years, for more than that, guys who ain't never, ever been to the state tournament or won a playoff game or had a 20-win season.
Yeah, because it's not easy to do, man. Those things, winning at a high level, winning at the level, you won four consecutive state championships. And to win four consecutive anything is just extraordinary. My daughter, who played at Hampton University, was on a powerhouse basketball team here in Michigan. They went to the finals four times. They only won it once. And it was really no fault of their own. It's just, hey, it's just hard to do. Because these other teams are practicing too. These other teams
exactly. You're right. they practice every day. They got plays. They got all of that stuff as well, right?
And when they come in to play the North Polar Bears, they know we got to bring our best game or we're going to get embarrassed. So you always.
Well, I don't want to brag. I don't want to brag, gentlemen, but so I tell them, you know, I've been fortunate to be in a state tournament seven times in my my 19 going on 20 year career. I'm now 18-1. So I tell my kids, if we get there, if we got the highest winning percentage in the state of Minnesota as a state tournament coach, I tell them if that one loss was my first year as a head coach. We lost in the first round, and if my team get there, we've been winning. So. I tell my kids, all you got to do is get us there. We'll be all right. We know the formula.
Coach, what do you think has been the key to your success over the years in building a championship program? Is it one or two things that just you got to do with every squad?
You know what? So I mean, to be honest with you, first and foremost, I tell people I'm a man of God, and so I just believe I can do all things through Jesus Christ who strengthened me. I believe that. And two, I love my kids unconditionally. And so because I love them that way, they play that way.
And that's it?
Those are the two things that I would say. Yeah. They know that I will run through the fire for them, and they'll run through the fire for me. And that's what's have worked. You know, I tell people all the time, I mean, I don't believe I'm a great X and O guy, but I do know how to get the best out of my players.
Yeah.
And I think that's been proven. I mean, and you guys as reported, every last kid that have come out of my program who's gone to college has either started as a freshman or been the sixth man and played significant minutes. They're college ready when they get there. Every last one of them.
Wow. That is pretty impressive, Coach. That's pretty good because you said quite a few.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
No, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was
Mike,
just saying,
I missed that.
Going back to what you. I was just saying, going back to what Ricky was talking about with Eddie Robinson, is that you think about not only was this man coaching, he had to build that program. He was the father of Grambling, basically. Produced guys like Willie Davis, James Harris, Doug Williams, and all that. So. To minimize what he did as a coach is a joke because that dude was the epitome of a coach and a father and all that entails and being the head of a sports team. So, you know, when you said about how some people dismissed that, I just had to say that this man is extraordinary.
Yeah.
It would be the picture that you would have in the dictionary of a coach.
No question about it.
You know what he did for years until he got – into his later years, he would get up, and he and his coaching staff would knock on players' door every morning to make sure they got up to go to breakfast, and the team had breakfast every morning. And
together.
Coach would say, "If you get them up, get them fed, they're going to go to class after that." And after games, Mike, he would invite. You know, I got my start covering. Tennessee State, as you well know, Mike, because you were there as well. After games, he would invite reporters over to his house for coffee and donuts and cookies or whatever after the game. I mean, he was such – I mean, how many guys – you think Nick Saban was inviting anybody over to his house after games? I mean, he was just a true sportsman and a true gentleman. Certainly one of the highlights of my career was being able to get to know Coach Rob a little bit. Hey, but Coach McKenzie, one thing I also wanted to talk to you about, it's not basketball related, but life related. And again, that's so much about what your whole program is about. The situation we saw the weekend in the SEC championship game with Jalen Hurts, he had been benched at the start of the season after leading his team to two national championship games by Tua Tagovailoa. And as it turns out, Tua got hurt in the championship game. And when Alabama needed Jalen Hurts the most, he was there. And more importantly, he was ready to play. What does that say about that kid? And what kind of lessons do we pass on from that experience?
Well, you know what? So one of the things that I remember is as a 19-year-old crossing the burning sands, my undergraduate advisor always used to tell me, he said, he had this saying, he said, prepare yourself as if your time will come. I can't promise you that your time will ever come, but the worst thing in the world to do is to have an opportunity and not be prepared. I'm actually going to send a letter. I started on it today to that kid. Just so much. I mean, to me, one, in this time and age that we're talking about with social media, You know, when he got benched, I know how, as a coach, I know the people that was up in his ear about he should quit, he should transfer. You know, we look at what happened with the kid at Clemson. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and again, here's a kid that, I mean, yeah, you after leading your team to two national titles, you get benched, somebody come and take your spot. I mean, he had every reason to walk away and quit. But, you know, thank God to parenting, to some obviously some very positive influences in his life. I mean, because I think he's already graduated, right? So
he
graduated on
the 15th.
He graduated, right. So, you know, I mean, he could have gone someplace else. I mean, he could have gone to Alabama State or Grambling or whatever and played immediately. But to stay there, suck it up, and wait for the opportunity to come back around. But more importantly, you know what I'm saying, to be ready and to take advantage.
Right.
I think it speaks volume of what that the character of that young man. Volume.
Yeah, that's just a tremendous story with Mr. Hurts, and you know, but coach, you look at kids, you see how transfer rates in the NCAA, both football and basketball, are at an all time high, and in some cases, I think I think too many kids are transferring, Mike and Larry, number one. However, I think there are instances. Well, I think it's a good idea for a kid to transfer. But what's your thoughts on that, Coach McKenzie? And then, Mike, I'd like to get your thoughts on what we're seeing in the NCAA in terms of transfers.
So my thoughts is it's a concern for me. I think one of the things that because of, you know, and it's just not the NCAA. It's just not the NCAA. It's high school. It's summer basketball. It's summer volleyball. I mean, and what scares me is, and I tell my young men this, the easiest thing in life to learn to do is to quit and go do something else. And we see that in alarming numbers of our families. Soon as adversity comes, soon as it's times get tough, you know what I'm saying, we throw in the towel. We go to the next one. We go do the next thing. And so, and it is. Sometimes it's not the right school. It's not the right coach. You know, I'm a believer that if coaches is able to leave, kids should be able to go to leave, and they should be able to play right away.
Yeah.
But also, we got to teach kids, you know, that life is not, I mean, everything is not going to be rosy, that you're going to stumble sometimes. There's going to be some ups and downs. And you got to be able to persevere and stick to it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and I tell people, Kappa Alpha Psi is the greatest impact, and I know times have changed. But pledging for 16 weeks, if I can do that, I can do anything.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying? And it taught me about persevering.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, and to me right now, you know, as soon as coach yells, raises his voice, I quit. I want to go someplace else. As soon as somebody else plays in front of me, I quit. I want to go someplace else. And the concern for me is this. You know, guys, when we was growing up, we was competing against kids from our community, Florida, Michigan, California, you know what I'm saying, wherever we grew up. Now, in this world, global economy where you're competing against folks all around, if you one of those folks that can't compete and the first sign of adversity, you learn to quit, life is going to be fairly rough for you. Times have changed.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times, you know, it's these parents living through their kids. And, you know, if my son don't play, he's not going to make the NFL. If my son don't play, he's not going to make the NBA. Or he's not going to do this and do this. So I got to get him out there someplace where he's going to play. And sometimes it works out, but most times it does not.
Now, Coach, don't go any further. And, Mike, I do want you to jump in on this. But, Coach, tell us how you handle situations when you get a kid that comes to you and tells you he should be playing more?
My first question would be to him, in front of who? Who? And you know what I'm saying? Really, I mean, so like, who are you? And so here's my thing to my kids. To even have that conversation with me, you got to come to me, and the first thing you got to be able to say, well, you got to start the conversation off like this. Coach, I've done everything, not some of the things, I've done every single thing you asked me to do. And if you and so if you've been late to practice, can't have that conversation. If you don't win, if you don't go 100% every day, we can't have that conversation. You don't go to class, we can't have that conversation. You late, we can't have that conversation. You got a referral, we can't have that conversation. So you better be on top of your game to come to me to even begin to open your mouth to have that kind of conversation.
So how do you handle parents that come to you about that, Coach?
So I just had my parent meeting tonight, is first thing I tell my parents is this. I have raised two kids. Both of them are doing fairly well. Both of them got college degrees. They've done. So I know a little bit about parents. You don't tell me how to run my basketball program, I won't tell you how to raise your son. I got some ideas as well, and I think I've been pretty good at that. Number two, when you want to talk about, and I told my kid, when you want to come to me and talk about playing time, if you're going to come to me and say I should be playing in front of Ricky Jr., then Ricky Sr. and Ricky Jr. both got to be in the meeting, and you got to say it to them.
That is a
I won't talk about somebody else's kid without them being in the room, and you got to be able to tell me why. You got to be able to tell them in their face that your kid better than them.
Right.
We don't have many of those kind of meetings.
Yeah. That is fabulous, Coach. That's the best answer to that question I've ever heard. And it's an age-old question that comes up all the time. That is the absolute best answer. But, Mike, I wanted to get your thoughts on this topic.
Well, also about the transferring. So with the transfer situation, I mean, I think it's good to have that option just in case you have a situation like I come in and I want to play for a coach and all of a sudden he is fired or he leaves and goes to somewhere else. And what am I to do? Am I, you know, I know
right.
You might need to handle adversity, but I should have the option to say, okay, well, the coach I wanted to play for is not here, I should be able to go somewhere else then. So I think that option, or if you have a situation like what
absolutely
happened in real life.
I agree with that 100%. With Houston,
when he was signed with Louisville, his father was assistant coach for Louisville, Allen Houston, another frat brother of ours. And then he ended up, Wade ended up getting a job at Tennessee, and Louisville wasn't going to let him leave. And then they finally acquiesced and let him go play for his father. So in cases like that, you know, I think that option should be available if it's a situation where, you know, you're kind of in a bind. You want to play for your father. That's a dream situation.
Right.
But Louisville could have actually fought that and said, no, you signed a letter of intent with us. You got to stay here. But they said, hey, go play with Wade, and look what he did. Ended up being, what, Tennessee's all-time scorer for a while and all that good stuff.
I covered Wade while he was there. I mean, Allen when he was there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree under those kind of circumstances. I agree. Yeah.
Hey, Coach, tell us about what are your thoughts on you're there in Minneapolis, the whole thing with Jimmy Butler and the direction the Timberwolves have gone since his trade to Philly.
Well, I think it speaks for itself. I was at the game last night. Watch him beat, came back from 26 down to beat Houston last night. You know, Jimmy Butler had issues in Chicago, and I haven't read the article today, so there's something I saw come across my screen about some statement he made about Markel Fultz today or something, but, I mean, he's already creating an issue in the locker room in Philadelphia.
So, you know, I mean, some guys are just not good teammates. And I understand, you know, so first of all, I understand, you know, Jimmy Butler, part of his issue was, I'm the best player on the team. You give Cat $190 million. You give Wiggins $147 million, and I believe Wiggins is way overpaid, you know, and you want to give me $100 million. So I understand the money thing. I think the way Jimmy Butler went about it was totally wrong. Given knowing his personality, if I was a GM, I would have never brought him back to training camp.
Yeah. But they've been better without him.
Seven game winning streak, something like they've been much better without him. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm a season ticket holder, and I didn't go to a game while he was there. I just thought he was a cancer, to be honest with you.
Wow.
And y'all do this for a living, so you know this. I mean, he also is delusional in the sense that if he thinks he is in the category with the Blake Griffins and the LeBron James, I mean, and I always use this term, but Jimmy Butler will never be a Batman. He's not going to lead a team to a championship.
Right.
He's a piece. He's a piece.
Right.
And he's also in a situation even there. I mean, you think that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are going to allow this guy to come in and take over their team? You're still the third option.
Right. That's true.
Well, that Embiid, man, he is, goodness gracious.
He's talented young man.
Yes,
I love watching him play. He's a talented young man.
And Coach, back to the pro basketball in Minneapolis. Remember, that's a newer thing because the old Lakers were probably way before you were there in the city. But with this
way before.
but think about it. Marbury had issue there, and then Sprewell when they said I can't feed my family, and they made him look horrible. And then Jimmy. So what is it with the organization? Because remember when they started off with Musselman, that team was like straight defense. They had no offense, and it was unexciting. And then, you know, Garnett era, and then, of course, when it was Garnett, Sam Cassell, and also Sprewell, they really did well. But what do you think about the whole culture of the Minnesota Timberwolves that
Well, the thing about it is,
like
it ain't the culture of the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's the Minnesota culture.
Okay.
You know, you got to understand,
okay.
I mean, until recently, I mean, you know, when I first arrived here, I mean, we had the population of people that looked like us was about 3%.
It's a little bit
much better now. And one of the things that I say often when I get a chance to talk to folks out in the community, I mean, everybody talks about Minnesota Knights, but Minnesota, I mean, the thing about it is, I mean, and this takes us on a whole nother thing. If you do the research, Minnesota is one of the leading cities in almost every category, Park Board, economic development, education, except when it comes to people of color, Minnesota has probably one of the highest unemployment rates for people of color. It has one of the largest gaps when it comes to wages between black and white. It ranks number 48 in the country around the achievement gap. So when it comes to statistics around black folks, Minnesota ain't the best. I mean, and I think USA Today or somebody just it's in the top 10 worst places to live, to be honest with you, for black folks.
Right.
So the franchise is just what do you call it? I mean, it's just part of what happens in Minnesota. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's been a challenging place for some of the professional athletes. You know what I'm saying? And bad management.
Right.
Bad management. You know, I mean, one of the things, I mean, nobody talks about, look at what happened to Sam Mitchell. Jimmy,
right.
I mean,
Sam Mitchell got fired for Tom Thibodeau to come and win with the same guys, win one playoff game, play one more game longer.
Right. And of course, we're talking about former Timberwolves coach Sam Mitchell.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But look at y'all, I mean, Sam is giving, if you give Sam another year, he does the same thing with those guys.
Right.
You know, we had Casey here.
Right.
Yeah, he's a heck of a coach, man. Goodness
gracious. Right. And no ifs, and buts about it. Right? No question about it. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, so you know, and again, I mean, when until recently, I mean, you know, this ain't the kind of environment that, you know, when a black face is, you know, you have too many of them, you know, as the faces of your franchises. I mean, it can be challenging selling tickets and sponsorship packages.
Right. Right.
Wow,
and when all else fails, I mean, it's entertainment, but it's also about economics.
Oh, it's definitely
right.
Business. Hey, Coach McKenzie, I'm one of our frat brothers. Man, this is a new related show tonight. But one of our frat brothers, Larry Lee, the former vice president of the Detroit Lions, I'm working on a book project with Larry. It's actually called The Black Factor, and he's looking at the impact of black coaches on the teams that they coach. And what Larry is saying, he is not saying that white men and white women can't coach their respective teams, but he does believe that the majority of black coaches seem to be able to bring a little something extra. Now, that doesn't mean they're always successful. That doesn't mean they always do a good job. But do you think, in your experiences as a coach and what you've been able to observe, that there's something to that?
Absolutely. I mean, Mike, and you've been a classroom teacher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a believer that if you when you put in front of people somebody that looks like them, there is greater impact. I think when you got a Dennis Green, when you got a Mike Tomlin, who happened to be another Kappa, when you got these coaches, I mean, the Tony Dungys, I mean, they bring a totally different perspective, because let's be honest, for any of those guys to get to that level, ain't nobody ever gave them a doggone thing, right? So they understand.
Exactly.
They understand what it takes. You know what I'm saying? And I think you just speak differently about it. I mean, you can relate. You can relate to those players. I mean, they know what it's like when people start talking about coming up the hard way and how difficult it is. I mean, I was just in a meeting on Saturday, which I didn't realize that Minnesota, Kevin Warren is the only black executive currently at his level in the NFL. That's crazy.
Hmm.
Yeah, Kevin used to be here.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, when you look at the rosters, right, that is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's an example of where it's so few that I can only use this one example. The former coach of the Michigan State University golf team was a black man, and doggone, his name is escaping me. He's been a guest on the show. Sam Perrier,
right,
my good
exactly.
friend Sam Perrier,
yeah, yeah.
was led
yeah.
Michigan State to the Big Ten title. Black coach. He was assistant golf coach at Stanford. When Stanford won a national title, he comes, leads Michigan State to the Big Ten title. In his third year, by the time his third year came around, he had to resign because the players just would not – they rejected him because he was a black man.
This is
right.
Sam will not tell
didn't
you
think
that.
You know nothing about golf.
Exactly.
Did right. he ha- was yep. he was he having to be a staffer when Tiger Woods was there?
No, he wasn't there, but he's one of the preeminent golf teachers in the world. Actually, he travels all over, and a Tennessee State guy, but he was rejected because of the color of his skin. So that just shows you how difficult the task is that we face, even when we are, and oftentimes more than qualified. They look at he can't be this good. He can't know this much about golf because he's a black man. Of course, people don't know.
Well, I mean, that's the reason that this country is currently in the predicament it is in because the same thing. I mean, I can't even say what I really want to say on the air right now. But, it's hard.
Everybody that listens to this show across the country know exactly where you're going with that.
Exactly, yeah. So they can read between the lines. But, when the predicament be in because people couldn't stand, the fact that there was an African-American, person that was the most powerful man in the world for 8 years.
Right.
And how in the world could that ever happen? And we have to make sure that we don't let that happen again.
And we're going to go the total opposite.
Yeah. And we got what we got.
You want to know what's frustrating was, of course, when we talk about coaches and not getting credit, when John Thompson had the 88 team and they lost, I was so upset because I said, now we give them ammunition to say, see, this guy can't coach. These black coach guys can't coach. You give him the Olympic job and he doesn't do it. And, of course, at Georgetown, he only won one championship out of those 4 years. And, so John Thompson took a lot of hits on that. And, plus, him being a strong-willed guy, too. And then it took, Lenny Wilkins to win back in 96 to finally, say, well, hey, we got a black coach that won the Olympic gold medal.
But even go back – let's come back to Minnesota again and look at what happened with Clem Haskins.
Right. Man,
another,
I was just going to bring him up, too.
Another opportunity. Yeah. Nolan Richardson.
Right?
I mean,
I think it's up to and you guys remember when Black got fired in Cleveland and my guy took over for him,
Tyronn Lue.
And do you remember the conversation LeBron had about that? Well, he talked about, man, this guy knows. I can just relate to him. He knows the struggle that I had. He came up without his father, and they just really clicked, and went on to win his championship, and be in the mix the whole time he was there. So,
he's a great coach. I mean, I think even now he got caught up into politics, but he'll end up back on somebody's sideline. I mean, because he is really a good coach.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And again, nobody's saying that white coaches can't do this job, and nobody's saying that white coaches can't relate. I mean, I look at the relationship that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had with his coach, John Wooden, at UCLA, the level of respect those two had for each other. And Coach Wooden was a disciplinarian, and we all know that Kareem, even as a young man, was outspoken. So, those relationships are there, but I'm with Larry, which is why I'm helping him with this thing. There's a little something added that a black coach brings to a program, and I think Coach McKenzie is a perfect example of that, Michael. When you hear him talk about all these things that have absolutely nothing to do with the game of basketball, but they are just as important as running an out-of-bounds play. Actually, more important than running an out-of-bounds play, but something you have to have, again, before you can get to that out-of-bounds play.
But one thing about it, you're going to be a black man a lot longer than you're going to be a basketball player.
Okay, absolutely. Absolutely.
There
that's
you
why
go,
I,
right?
I hate when people try to defer it and say, no, I'm a coach, but that happens to be black. So no.
Yeah.
You are a black man at birth or a black,
right.
You know, black male.
Yeah.
So.
Can I tell the kids
now? Exactly.
They might not believe it, but I did used to play the game. Right? Yeah, so.
Right.
Well, look, guys, we got to get out of here. This has been a tremendous conversation. Coach McKenzie, tell us about your book
You know what? So here's what I'm going to tell everybody. So stay tuned, and I hope to be back on in January. So we're in the process of finalizing a new release of the book along with another project that should be done here fairly soon. So I always enjoy being on with you guys, and definitely we have some really great conversation. But I hope to come back on in January and talk about the book. Well, I will put something out soon. The book is called Basketball, So Much More Than Just a Game, and it's about life lessons. It's the things that the game has taught me, shared in 10 chapters. B, talking about the business. A, appreciating the people in your life. The importance of being a student athlete, enjoying the moment. T, being teachable, believing in yourself. Attitude determines altitude. Live to love, love to live. All about basketball and its life lessons. So we are re-releasing it with some updated materials and some new stories, and we should be hitting the market again here in January with the second edition.
Well, Coach, do
all
us
right.
a favor and be sure to let us know when you're about to drop that, and we'll be sure to get you back on the air.
Yes, sir. You guys will be the first to know, and I always appreciate it. So happy holidays.
I always appreciate you. Yes, sir.
Happy holidays.
Right.
Enjoy yourself. And keep doing it. I mean, I just want to say this because I know it's probably not said enough. What you guys are doing is so valuable, and especially in this time to be communicating with black folks all over the world talking about these issues, because if we don't, nobody else will. So thank you for what
you
do.
That's exactly why we do it, Coach.
All right. Yeah.
And,
Coach, can I ask
exactly
you a question? So are you guys have any games out in this area?
I'm sorry.
I said, do you guys have any games scheduled out in this area, you know, your tournaments or anything?
You know what? We'll be in Chicago. The closest we get to you guys is we'll be in Chicago Martin Luther King weekend. We're playing in Chicago.
Okay,
what's
I think
those
I saw
days,
that.
Coach?
Nothing out.
What is that, January 19th?
Okay. Oh, yeah, January 19th.
Okay.
I'm sure Ricky Junior will be over there watching you guys.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure
nothing out here in California, Coach?
Nah, we haven't been able to travel out that far yet, so.
Okay. All right.
All right, man.
All right, well, thanks for everything.
We're out of here, gentlemen.
All right.
Take care, Luke.